Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org. That's right, it's time for Baptist Basics University. Once again, I'm Matthew Gage. We're continuing our series on the book of Acts with lesson number 33. The title of the lesson is The Journey to Rome, Part 1. Be in Acts chapter 27, covering the entire book, or entire chapter, that is, verses 1 through 44. And we're now drawing close, as I keep mentioning. We're in the second to last chapter in the book of Acts. We will have two more lessons after this. We will cover chapter 27 today, and then lesson 34 we'll cover chapter 28. And then we'll do one lesson, just kind of wrapping up and kind of telling what happens after the book of Acts, some of the legends about Paul and what he did, and kind of just wrap it up and wrap up what happened basically for the next 5 or 10 years, especially after the close of the book of Acts. But today we're in chapter 27, and we will begin covering Paul's fourth journey that's recorded in the book of Acts. We have the three missionary journeys, and then this journey, the journey to Rome. And as if you've been listening along, you remember that Paul, while back in Judea, was about to be charged for some crime, no one knows what, and appealed his case to Caesar. And, you know, basically, you know, we explained why did he do that. Probably, my guess, partly was just to get out of Judea. I think it's part of God's plan all along. God had revealed to him that he was supposed to go to Rome. And, you know, practically speaking, why would he do it? Just to get out of Judea, because he's been in a legal limbo for probably 2 or 3, 4 years by this point. So Paul is now ready after Festus comes in as the new governor and inherits the case of Paul. He's put on trial before Paul. And then after King Agrippa hears his case, is kind of an expert on the matters of the Jews and stuff, he's ready to sail for Rome. And that's the trip that's going to begin. Now, this trip is very amazing. It's a... it's quite an extraordinary trip. Most of the rest of the time on his journeys, it's more about what he does on the stops. The next couple chapters are more about the journey itself. Very little happens when he actually gets to Rome that's recorded. But so much adventure takes place on this journey, highlighted, of course, by a shipwreck. Travel in those days was very dangerous. It was fairly expensive. In fact, really, sea travel... until just recent, you know, years, was extremely dangerous. I mean, I've been listening to an audiobook version of David McCullough's new book, The Greater Journey, talking about these Americans going to Paris to study in the 1800s, and talking about how dangerous the trip was. And, you know, basically as they would leave, they would have friends and family try to talk them out of it because of how dangerous the journey was. And, you know, at this time, it's even more dangerous, and that's why they would sail so close to land. They would make many stops at the ports just for safety. You know, they did not venture far away from the shore in most cases. And of course, in this case, we have this vivid description of a shipwreck. And it's very interesting. I'll tell you this, too. I was listening to some... there's many colleges now and universities that post their lectures online. And I was listening to some on the Roman Empire, actually from UC Berkeley in California. And the lady... I've gone blank on her name, but the lady that was doing... You know, the professor of the course... used this in had her students read Acts 27, I think even 28, because of the description of the sailing and the description of the shipwreck, because it's one of the best ancient sources of describing what would happen in the sea travel. So, but anyway, well, let's just jump right on in. We're going to begin in Caesarea, somewhere around 60-61 AD, according to our timeline. And we'll get underway. So verse 20, chapter 27, verse 1. And when it was determined that we should sail into Italy, then they delivered Paul and certain other prisoners unto one named Julius, a centurion of Augustus's band. Okay. Tell you what, let's go to verse 2. And entering into a ship of Adramidium, we launched, meaning to sail by the coast of Asia, one Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica, being with us. Okay, you know, so many details in these verses. We'll read a few and then we'll break them down. First off, we see it's finally time for Paul to head to Rome. And he's been put under the command with other prisoners that are being sent to Rome for who knows what various reasons. Perhaps they've also appealed their cases to Caesar. But this man named Julius, who kind of become a central figure in parts of the story, we see he's a centurion, so he's a little bit of a ranking officer in the Roman army. And notes that he's of Augustus's band. Now, this is it's a local, actually, group, a local cohort that's just named in honor of Caesar. This is not from like an Italian, I don't know what to say, an Italian squad or a cohort or something. This actually is a local one there to Judea. And it's just named in honor of Caesar. You know, there's so many things named in honor of Caesar, including the town that they're going away from, you know, Caesarea. And he's most likely is Italian with his name Julius. That's not a local name. It's a very much a Roman name. So we also see that this is a ship of Adramidium. Adramidium is a town up in Western Asia Minor. Now, something about sea travel in those days is, a lot of times you just could not get passage on a ship, you know, going where you wanted to go. Say you wanted to sail from Rome to Caesarea. There weren't ships making that voyage straight. So a lot of times you would have to, you know, sail as far as one ship would go and then try to hitch a ride on another ship to make the distance. And these aren't passenger ships. These are actually cargo ships. This is for trade. Mainly, so that's why they're paying their way basically to get on board with these small freighter type ships, which are not very big by today's standards. If you do some research, they are not very big. I mean, this is not like the Titanic or, you know, a modern day cruise liner. These are very small ships by those standards. And so what you would do is you'd find a ship going the general direction you were going, and then pay to ride with them as far as they were going. So, and that's basically what they're doing here. They found a ship that's evidently been doing some trade there locally in Judea, and they're on their way back to this town of Adramidium. So they're headed back that general direction, and it says their plan was to sail up into, you know, Asia Minor up there in modern day Turkey, and then just catch a ride on the other ship and keep going on the journey. Also, interesting note that as far as we can tell, only three people, or two other people besides Paul, let me say, are with Paul on this journey. One is Luke, because we can tell because he's using the word "we" again, and also this man Aristarchus. If you go to BaptistBasics.org and go to the download section, I actually have a sermon I preached about Aristarchus. He's only mentioned five times in the entire book or in the entire Bible, and just some little lessons you can learn from him. But it's interesting to note that at this point, you know, where's Timothy? Where's Titus? Now, they're out. They haven't forsaken Paul. They're out carrying on the work. But there's only two faithful friends that are beside Paul right now, and that's Luke and Aristarchus. So, verse 3. And the next day we touched at Sidon. So they're sailing up the coast north. Sidon is one of the old Phoenician cities, Tyre and Sidon. A lot of times you hear those were kind of the leading cities of Phoenicia. It's also a port city. Continuing, it says, and Julius courteously entreated Paul and gave him liberty to go unto his friends to refresh himself. So we see that Julius trusts Paul to some extent and gives him a little bit extra privilege. He's not just chained down and treated like a murderer. He actually has some liberty, which kind of goes with the Romans. If someone is of sufficient stature, they would, they wouldn't necessarily just be in shackles the whole way, chained down. They would have a little bit of liberty. So that's kind of what's going on there is, Paul is at liberty to go in, speak to the church there, and kind of just goes to show how much Julius is trusting Paul. Excuse me. Verse 4. And when we had launched from thence, we sailed under Cyprus. That's the island there in the Mediterranean between between the Israel and Turkey, modern day. So they're kind of sailing now. They've left the coast and they're actually sailing out in a northwest direction. It says because the winds were contrary, so basically that's the only choice they had. Think about it also at these times, how was the ship powered? Unless it was a warship and they had a bunch of slaves, with paddles, it was driven by the wind with sails. So they were at the mercy of the wind. So in this case, they actually decided to go this direction just because that's the way the winds were blowing. Verse 5, and we had sailed over the Sea of Cilicia and Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. Okay, so these cities are on the on southwestern Asia Minor that he's speaking of. So, and Myra and Lycia is the region, Myra's the town. So this is kind of on the southwestern corner of Asia Minor. If you look at a map, it's probably best just to look at a map. It's difficult to explain this, especially because it's geography most of us are not very familiar with. And let's see here, where are we at? In verse 6, and there the centurion found a ship of Alexandria sailing into Italy, and he put us therein. I can't talk. So, like I said, they've gone as far as they can go based with this ship. They found another ship that's actually going into Italy. This is a trading ship from Alexandria. There's a lot of trade that went on between, especially grain and food coming out of Egypt. So, and being shipped up into Italy. So they found this ship it's another merchant ship, same thing, and they're basically going to pay their way, get on there, and take this ship on into Italy, or that's the plan. Verse 7. Well, continuing the journey. And when we had sailed slowly many days, and scarce were come over against Cnidus, the wind not suffering us, we sailed under Crete over against Salmone. Okay. Cnidus is on the southwest corner also of Asia Minor, so they're just continuing to sail. Crete is an island. It's south of Greece. It's the fifth largest Mediterranean island. There's hundreds and thousands of islands out there around Greece. And this is one of the largest ones. Of course, it's probably most familiar to Bible scholars because we know that's where Titus was when Paul wrote to him. Salmone, this is a city on the northeast side of Crete. Basically, they're going to come over and sail south of this island. And hardly passing it, came unto a place which is called the Fair Havens, nigh whereunto was the city of Lycia. Okay. Fair Havens actually is a very beautiful harbor. If you look up pictures of it, is very beautiful. But this was, this was a good place to harbor. It was a beautiful natural harbor there. Lycia is a town, I believe it's a little bit to the east of there. So they could go in, get supplies from there. There wasn't actually a town there at this harbor. So verse 9. Now when much time was spent, and when sailing was now dangerous because the fast was now already past, Paul admonished them. Okay, so what it is, they're too late in the year, and the winds and the weather is going to be very contrary for sailing. So a lot of times what would happen in a case like this is you would just find a port, put your ship into port, and wait until, a little bit later, later time when the weather would be better for sailing. So it says, Paul admonished them, verse 10, and said to them, "Sirs, I perceive that this voyage will be with hurt and much damage, not only of the lading and ship, but also of our lives." So Paul reveals to them, says, "Look, guys, we do not need to leave. We need to stay here. It's very dangerous if we go." Well, our sailor's going to listen to some, you know, poor Jew that's a prisoner. No, they're not. You know, they think they know what's best, and they're not, you know, probably their ego and pride get in their way, but they're not going to listen to Paul. Verse 11, "Nevertheless, the centurion believed the master and the owner of the ship more than those things which were spoken by Paul." So basically he's like, look, you know, he's going to trust the sailors, and he's like, "Sorry, Paul, you're a great guy, but I trust the sailors. You're not a sailor." Which Paul's actually spent quite a bit of time at sea in these travels. So a lot more. It's amazing. Really, at this time, the travel, while it was still fairly rare that people traveled, it actually was at a greater percentage of travel, probably, that was not surpassed until just in recent centuries. There was a lot of travel that went on, a lot of trade that went on. You get into times like the Middle Ages where people rarely left the valley they were born in. And there actually was quite a bit of travel comparatively at this time in the Roman Empire. In fact, I've heard studies, you know, that even the pollution, they've done study on, you know, on tree rings and stuff, and that the pollution at the time was not surpassed. It actually was highest at the Roman Empire, slacked off, and did not surpass that until the Industrial Revolution took place over in England and America and such. So that at this time, because of the manufacturing stuff. So, I mean, it's a very prosperous, really, I mean, we think the ancient world is being very simplified. Under the Roman Empire, it was fairly advanced, and there was a lot of travel, a lot of trade, a lot of production that really has no equal until modern days. So verse 12, "And because the haven was not commodious to winter in, the more part advised to depart thence also, if by any means they might attain to Phoenice, and there, or Phoenice, I guess would be technically how you'd say it, which is in haven of Crete, and lieth toward the southwest and northwest." Okay, so basically this Fair Havens is not a good place to winter because of the weather. There's not like a city right there, so supplies are a little bit difficult. So they decide to sail on this town, Phoenice, or it's actually nowadays is Phoenix, just like the town in Arizona is what it's known as. And it's a port, in fact, a major port on the southwestern corner of Crete. So basically, decide to leave, sail west back over and get to this different harbor. Well, like I said, that's what the plan was. Verse 14. "But not long after there arose against it a tempestuous wind called Euryclidon, I think is the way Alexander Scorby says it." Okay. What is this thing? Scholars debate this. Basically, if you break it down, it basically just means a storm or wind blowing from the northeast. Some people take it to be a hurricane or typhoon. But whatever it is, it's something that probably rose up during that time. They said there are certain times of year these storms would come up and would blow from that general direction. And would fit with this. That name, though, like I said, scholars debate on this because that name is, I want to say they have not found any other reference of this name that's given to it. But it's a very descriptive name. It actually just kind of means a wind blowing from the northeast. So it'd be these winds coming out over Asia Minor and coming down into the Mediterranean. So whatever it is a vicious, vicious storm, probably like unto what we would call a hurricane or a typhoon. Verse 15. "Now when the ship was caught and could not bear up into the wind, we let her drive." So basically they've quit trying to steer the ship and just let the wind blow it where it will. Verse 16. "And running under a certain island which is called Clauda, we had much work to come by the boat. So this is a small island south of Crete, so the wind is blowing them kind of in a south. Well, if it's coming from northeast, it's blowing in the southwest, blowing them kind of southwest. But like I said, it's a storm, so it's not just a steady wind, so they're kind of getting thrown about. He talks about they're having trouble with the boat already. The storm's doing damage. Verse 17, which when they had taken up, they used helps undergirding the ship and feared lest they should fall into the quicksands, strike sail, and so were driven. So basically, they hadn't even had the sail. The wind's just driving them to the come closest island. They're afraid of hitting ground, so they put the sails back up and work to get the ship away from the island so that they don't crash. Verse 18, And we being exceedingly tossed with a tempest, the next day they lightened the ship. What's going on here? They're throwing stuff overboard to increase the buoyancy of the ship. This is something you see in movies and stuff. Lighten the ship, they'll go to throwing cargo and stuff overboard because water's coming on the ship. A lighter ship is going to stay afloat more. So they're just, as I say, throwing cargo, extra non-necessary items, they're throwing them overboard. This is pretty much a desperate measure. This means that they were in fear of their lives. 19. And the third day we cast out with our own hands the tackling of the ship. So now they're down to, they're throwing away necessary items. The tackling, that's the gear for the sails and stuff. Verse 20. And when neither sun nor stars in many days appeared, and no small tempest lay on us, all hope that we should be saved was then taken away. So they're caught in the middle of this just for days. The storm is just raging. They're tossed over the sea. Probably have not slept in days as they're being tossed. I mean, they are working to save their own lives, just working for survival at this point. Verse 21. But after long abstinence, Paul stood forth in the midst of them and said, "Sirs, you should have hearkened unto me and not have loosed from Crete and to have gained this harm and loss." It's like, look, guys, you should have listened to me. I tried to tell you back there. Verse 22. And now I exhort you to be of good cheer, for there shall be no loss of any man's life among you, but of the ship. Verse 23. For there stood by me this night the angel of God, whom I am and whom I serve. 24, saying, "Fear not, Paul, thou must be brought before Caesar, and lo, God hath given thee all them that sail with thee." So, God's revealed through an angel. We'll get into that. But this message that God sends to Paul is basically, look, Paul, you have to go to Rome. Don't worry, you're going to survive, and everyone else in the ship is going to survive too. Verse 25. Wherefore, sirs, be of good cheer, for I believe God that it shall be even as it was told me. Verse 26, howbeit we must be cast upon a certain island. So, basically, God revealed to him that, yes, everyone's going to survive. The ship, though, is not. It's going to crash. It's going to wreck. And basically, in those days, that meant death for everyone. You usually did not survive a shipwreck. But God revealed this plan to Paul, so verse 27. But when the 14th night was come, as we were driven up and down in Adria, about midnight the shipmen deemed that they drew near to some country. Okay. Adria, that's talking about the Adriatic Sea. The sea between Greece and Greece and Rome. And okay. So they're beginning to get close to a land. They can tell they're getting close to land. Verse 28. And sounded and found it 20 fathoms. And when they had gone a little further, they sounded again and found it 15 fathoms. So what they would do is drop a rope with a weight over it and would measure how deep it is. So in spite of the storm, they're able to tell, okay, we're getting close to land. They don't know where they're at this point. It says 14 days. 14 days they've been cast about the sea. Verse 29, then fearing lest we should have fallen upon rocks, they cast four anchors out of the stern and wished for the day. So it's still dark out. They can't tell what's going on. They're afraid of being the wind driving them up against the shore, up against rocks, and which basically would have meant death to, basically right now, let's say they're working just for pure survival. They cast out four anchors into the sea to help steady the boat, to leave it right where it's at, so they, when maybe when daylight comes, they can see what they're handling, they can make a safe landing. Verse 30, and as the shipmen were about to flee out of the ship, when they had let down the boat into the sea, under color is as though they would have cast anchors out of the foreship. So there's men trying to sneak off. It's something, I guess, like a lifeboat would be the best description of this. So all the sailors are basically decided, you know, in a something, I guess, of a mutiny in a way. They're going to leave the ship. They're going to get out, and they're going to take their chances and try to get to shore. And disguised, it says under color as though. So basically under disguise that they're casting out, they're pretending that they're casting out anchors, but in reality they're trying to flee the ship. Verse 31, Paul said to the centurion and to the soldiers, except these abide in the ship, ye cannot be saved. So then the soldiers cut the ropes of the boat and let her fall off. So basically they just, the whatever little lifeboat type thing that they had there, they cut the ropes and just cast it in the sea, and it's gone. And so the sailors are prevented from escaping. Verse 33. And while the day was coming on, Paul besought them all to take meat, saying, this day is the 14th day that ye have tarried and continued fasting, having taken nothing. Verse 34. Wherefore I pray you to take some meat, for this is for your health. And there shall not an hair fall from the head of any of you. So Paul, after, you know, it's 14 days. They know they're getting close to land, but they're now afraid not just sinking to the bottom of the sea, but being cast against rocks or something like that, crashing up against this whatever island they're against. Paul says, hey, look, guys, it's been 14 days since y'all, probably not since they've eaten. That probably means they were dead. But, you know, they haven't taken a proper meal. They, you know, just ate something as they've gone by. And probably haven't felt like eating, probably been so seasick because of the waves. So Paul says, all right, look, guys, let's eat. You're going to need your strength. Verse 35, and when he had thus spoken, he took bread and gave thanks to God in presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. Verse 36, then were they all of good cheer, and they also took some meat. So Paul sits down, you know, gives thanks, begins to eat. Everyone else begins to eat also. So verse 37, and we were in all the ship 260 souls. So, I mean, this is a pretty good size ship. That is a, quite a few people, 260 and then 16. So, 276 people on board between the passengers and sailors. Verse 38. And when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and cast out the wheat into the sea. So now that they've eaten, they cast out the rest of the food. Basically, there's no turning back at this point. Verse 39, and when it was day, they knew not the land, but they discovered a certain creek with a shore into which they were minded, if it were possible, to thrust in the ship. So they don't know where they're at. They see this island. They see what looks like a creek. They see a beach and looks like there's a small stream or river, you know, flowing into the ocean. So it looks like probably that's the safest bet. You know, there's not going to be rocks or anything, most likely. So it looks like if they're going to be able to get somewhere safe, that's where it is. Verse 40. And when they had taken up the anchors, they committed themselves unto the sea and loosed the rudder bands and hoisted up the mainsail to the wind and made toward shore. So, no turning back. They're just trying to make it to land at this point. And by the way, it's not calm weather. The storm is evidently still raging. So, they've pulled the anchors up. They've loosed the rudder band, so they're not even steering at this point. Hoisted up the sail, and they're trying to make it to the sail, or trying to make it to the shore. Verse 41. And falling into a place where two seas meet, they ran the ship aground. And the fore part struck fast and remained unmovable, but the hinder part was broken from the violence of the waves. Okay, so what happens here is if you've ever been on a lake or seen an ocean where you have like a lagoon or a bay or something where and you see the wind blowing, and you can see the wind blowing the waves out like in the bigger part of the lake or ocean, but this bay or lagoon or what have you is kind of separated from that, and it's calm. Basically, that's what it's talking about. Some people, I want to say I read somewhere, talked about, well, this couldn't be true. You know, they thought that this is so unscientific. You know, they thought there was actually two bodies of water. Well, as I say, I've been out like on a lake before, and you have like a, like a seawall or something built, you know, to keep like the little bay, keep it calm for the ships. They do this a lot of times with different harbors and such. Even the Romans would build this. And so basically what, you know, and so you have like all the waves out there, but you get into this little secluded spot and there's not any waves. The ship is calm, you know, the sea is calm. I hope I'm describing that. I'm kind of stuttering doing that. And basically that's what's happened here is they're trying to make it into this, to this little harbor. The ship runs aground, but it's caught in between that, the calmer portion of the harbor and the viciousness of the storm ravaged sea. So the front part of the ship is steady and stuck in the ground, but the back part is still being thrashed about with waves and is broken apart. So basically the ship is breaks in half at this point. So this is not a good place to be. It's, you know, you want to make it to shore. You want to get into the calmer waters and get away from the get away from the stormy sea. Let's see here. Where are we at? Verse 42. And the soldiers' counsel was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim out and escape. Soldiers, like we've talked about, have to go by their duty. If the prisoners escape, they probably would pay for it with their lives. I don't know if in this case, because of the circumstances of a shipwreck and stuff, if they've been given a pass, but evidently they weren't expecting one. Basically, they just thought it'd be best just to go ahead and kill the prisoners, not that way no one escapes. And they would know there wouldn't be any doubt. You know, well, we don't know. He's not accounted for. No, we just know they were all dead. Verse 43, but the centurion were willing to save Paul, who evidently at this point I would be trusting him after, you know, after everything he said has come to pass, kept them from their purpose and commanded that they which could swim should cast themselves first into the sea and get to land. Verse 44, and the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship, and so it came to pass that they escaped all safe to land. So 276 people all make it out of this. The ones that could swim, you know, this get out and swim. The rest of them who could not swim, basically, you know, would find a beam of the ship and hold on to it, and you know the wind and stuff was still pushing them towards the shore. And so at the end of the day, we have 276 castaways here on this island that they still have no idea where they're at, but they're just thankful to be alive, and they've just escaped a situation that in most of the time would have meant certain death. And we'll leave off there, and we'll talk about where they landed and what happens there, and actually get Paul into Rome in the next lesson as we jump into chapter 28. And I don't know if there's much more I can say. We'll kind of leave it kind of mid-story here, but Paul is safe and still on his way to Rome, and we'll reach Rome in the next chapter. Well, I appreciate you listening today. I hope it's been a help and a blessing to you. Hope that you, if nothing else, have learned something. There's not a lot of deep spiritual truths, you know, lying in the open of this. Just more of a straightforward story of Paul's travel and the shipwreck. But I hope that you've learned something, understand it maybe a little bit better historically. And like I said, we'll jump right in and finish up the actual book of Acts in our next lesson. And then finish up with the rest of the story in lesson number 35. Well, I'll quit rambling. I'm Matthew Gage. I appreciate you listening today. Check out BaptistBasics.org for other resources. And we will see you next time.